to the first book of Kings and chapter 17. The first book of Kings and chapter 17. I hope no one minds if I take this off tonight. Is that all right? It's only Marks and Spencer's and it won't take any more washing. And I was given permission last night, I won't say from where, but from the highest authority, to take it off. And it wasn't Ian. 1 Kings 17, please, and I want you just to come with me tonight into a very privileged area. I want you to watch with me afresh tonight this highly sensitive, you didn't look at him like that maybe before, this highly sensitive, highly compassionate, highly human man. I just want to watch him in a remarkable place. Forgot to communicate to our chairman that we changed the order because I'm not quite on Carmel yet. Tomorrow night I'll get to Carmel. Tonight I want to go to Zarephath. And in 1 Kings chapter 17 I want us to ask the question, what doest thou here, Elijah? Verse 8, and the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, arise, get thee to Zarephath, which belongeth to Zidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there gathering of sticks. And he called to her and said, fetch me, I pray thee, a little water in a vessel that I may drink. And as she was going to fetch it, he called to her and said, bring me, I pray thee, a morsel of bread in thine hand. She said, as the Lord thy God liveth, I have not a cake but an handful of meal in a barrel and a little oil in a cruse. Behold, I'm gathering two sticks that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die. And Elijah said unto her, fear not, go and do as thou hast said, but make me thereof a little cake first, bring it unto me, make for thee and for thy son. For thus saith the Lord God of Israel, the barrel of meal shall not waste, neither shall the cruse of oil fail, until the day that the Lord sendeth rain upon the earth. And she went and did according to the saying of Elijah, and she and he and her house did eat many days. And remarkably, the barrel of meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of oil fail, according to the word of the Lord which he spake by Elijah. And it came to pass after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick. And his sickness was so sore that there was no breath left in him. And she said unto Elijah, what have I to do with thee, O thou man of God? Art thou come unto me to call my sin to remembrance and to slay my son? This highly human, compassionate man says to her, give me thy son. And he took him out of her bosom and carried him up into a loft where he abode and laid him upon his own bed. He cried unto the Lord and said, O Lord my God, hast thou also brought evil upon the widow with whom I sojourn by slaying her son? And he stretched himself upon the child three times, cried unto the Lord and said, O Lord my God, I pray thee, let this child's soul come into him again. And the Lord heard the voice of Elijah. And the soul of the child came into him again and he revived. And this highly human, compassionate man took the child, brought him down out of the chamber into the house and delivered him to his mother. And Elijah said, see, thy son liveth. And the woman said to Elijah, now by this I know that thou art a man of God, and that the word of the Lord in thy mouth is truth. What doest thou here, Elijah? Zarephath. We gained the authority from our brother Jack last evening to share the truth of the names of Scripture. So full. We saw the meaning of Cherith last night. What doest thou here, Elijah? Zarephath. The verb means, doesn't it, to melt, to smelt, to refine. When you find it as a noun, and this is what I want to share with you tonight, you discover that it means a crucible or a furnace. I want, if I may tonight, because it's just a bit smaller and a bit more personal, I want just to look at a crucible tonight. What doest thou here, Elijah? And Elijah will tell you at Zarephath, he's in a crucible. What does a crucible look like? What does a crucible feel like? Because I want to put Elijah in one tonight. And I want you to put your mind, yourself, into one tonight. And I'm very, very conscious. And I want to say, in spite of my forthright style, speaking sympathetically tonight, as we will when we get to Horeb, that there are some people who know more about the crucible than I do. And there are some here tonight who are experiencing the crucible more than I am. What does the crucible look like? What does it feel like? Well, come with me to New Testament scriptures and turn over, please, to the book of James. And I'm not sure how far we'll get tonight, but when we get there, we'll stop. And in James chapter 1, you'll find you're in a crucible or you're in a furnace. And you'll begin to see what it looks like and what it feels like. This is very practical. James, verse 1, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greeting. And now you're in the crucible. My brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into divers temptations or testings or trials, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect or mature and entire, wanting nothing. And in the midst of the crucible, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. Look at verse 9. In the midst of the crucible, let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low. Verse 12. Blessed is the man that endureth testing, trial, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. And that's what a crucible looks like. And that's what a crucible feels like. And you'll never be effective on Carmel till you've been at Cherith. until you've been to Zarephath. There's something about people that have been there that raises them above the rest. And tonight, what doest thou here, Elijah? And Elijah will tell you, I'm in the crucible. What does James tell us? Just go through that with me. Let us put Elijah there. James tells us, doesn't he, that the crucible is a must for every believer. Notice the words, verse 2. When, not if ye fall into divers testings. It's when. It's not if. Elijah will tell you that it's the crucible. And James will tell you that the crucible is a must. I sometimes pick up Warren Wiersbe's books and read them. They're a bit refreshing sometimes. And he actually remarks about verse 1 of James 1 to remind us that we are God's scattered people, not God's sheltered people. How true that is. The crucible is not an optional extra. The crucible of trial and testing is a must. I don't need to remind you that when you look at 1 Kings chapter 17, God doesn't debate, does he, the matter with Elijah? He says, arise, get thee to Zarephath, and we saw last night, Cherith, dwell there. This isn't a passing thing. Live there. Stay there. Make your home there. And possibly for a year he was at Cherith. And I don't know how long at Zarephath, but God tells him to dwell there. It's a must for Elijah. It's not an optional extra. It's vital preparation for him to become a man of God. It's vital preparation for him to stand on Carmel. Don't fight against the crucible, will you? We'll come to it later. I want to speak sensitively. Don't try and leap out of the crucible. Don't try to avoid it. It's a must for the development of the people of God. Step further, James chapter 1, verse 2. Here's the comfort. The crucible is planned and controlled by God. Notice he says, when he says, when ye fall into divers temptations, divers testings, it's when you fall. That word means when you encounter, when you face. It's not as if I'm walking along and fortuitously fall into the crucible. It's great to discover this, isn't it? And Elijah discovered this, that this crucible experience and others in his life were planned, controlled, directed by God. Nothing by chance in Elijah's life. Nothing of chance that he encountered trials and testings. It was God that took him on his journey, wasn't it, from his home to Ahab's palace, to Cherith, to Zarephath, before ever he said, go show thyself to Ahab. God took him through the crucible. Hard sometimes to grasp that when you're in the crucible. When the times of trials and testing come, and some of you know more about that than me, just to rest in this, that it's planned, it's directed, it's under God's control. If you had been in control of Elijah, if I had been in control of Elijah, we would have left him in the land confronting the challenge of Ahab. We said that last evening. He bursts into the presence of Ahab and with dramatic impact announces the message. And you would have left him there and I would have left him there. We need a man like this. But God says, I need this man to go through the crucible. There's nothing by chance that he's come the direction that he's come. There's nothing by chance that he's at Cherith. There's nothing by chance that he's at Zarephath. Rest in the Lord. Wait patiently for him. The crucible is under his control. Look again at verse 2. He says, when ye fall into divers testings, many kinds. There are many crucibles around this room tonight. I haven't got a clue what most of them are. You do. And your crucible may be very different to mine. And it might be very different to the person who is sitting next to you. That crucible at this moment in time may contain persecution for your faith. It might contain sickness. It may contain loneliness. It may contain bereavement. It might contain broken relationships. It might contain heartache, disappointments, tragedies. For some people, it may mean nearly all of those things. I'm truly amazed sometimes, aren't you, at the direction that the Lord takes some believers. The trials, the crucibles are many and various. I could never understand. I had a sister who went through nearly all of those. She's now with the Lord. People would have described her as a very simple soul. Believer. I don't know why the Lord took her through so much. I don't know, I can't understand why that crucible was so full for her. From heartache, loneliness, bereavement, health. I just don't understand why it was so full for her and not for someone else. But the Lord knew. I don't know why that dear sister in our assembly just recently gone to be with the Lord. I don't know why she had to see a child die before she went. And that child an unbeliever. I don't understand why she was a diabetic. I don't understand why she had one leg amputated. And then the next, both legs amputated. That crucible was full. And yet she rested in this, that crucible was governed, directed, it was in God's hand. When ye fall into divers temptations, for Elijah, he would discover how many and various they were. From the quiet seclusion of a brook, Cherith, where God provided for his need, to watching a bubbling brook dry up, become a barren bed, to a 100 miles long journey from Cherith to Zarephath, into a Gentile widow's house. And when he comes to that widow's house to discover that it's in Zidon, the home of Jezebel and Baal worship, and to discover that the widow woman is picking up sticks, ready to die. Divers, testings. It took him to Carmel, and it took him to a cave. What doest thou here, Elijah? And the trials were many and various. But I want to say this tonight for all of our encouragements, whatever our crucible is, that the crucible produces something worthwhile. It's all in God's plan. It's all in God's control. And if we just but rest in that, something worthwhile comes out of it. Look at James 1, verses 3 and 4. Knowing, he says this, that the trial of your faith worketh, that is, it works continually. It develops continually. And you say to me tonight, in the midst of the crucibles of life, what does it develop? Listen, says James. Something good can come out from these crucibles. And he says it develops patience. That is endurance. Looked up the word, it means perseverance, doesn't it? Being under a heavy load, the thought is, and of staying there under it instead of trying to escape. That's the full force of the word. That's easily said. It's hardly lived. To be under a heavy load in my crucible and resolutely stay there, when everything within me sometimes says, I want to get out of this. I want to escape. There must be somewhere better than this. But James says this crucible brings patience, endurance. I've always been touched and admired people who've been through crucibles fiercer than mine. And I've just been impressed by the quality that's come out of it. And I think my, in a sense, how much I've missed by not experiencing what they've experienced. It brings endurance, patience. Look at what James says in verse 4. It brings completeness. It brings maturity. But he says, let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. One author has put it simply like this, that mature Christians are the end product of testing. Some of you may read Hebert's commentaries. He's one of the Mennonite brethren in America. If you haven't read any of his commentaries, they're really worth reading. Some good stuff. You won't agree with it all, like any commentary. But he puts it simply like this. Maturity of character, he says, is not the result of the number of trials encountered, but the way in which those trials are met, allowing them to achieve their divinely intended impact on us. It's not how many. It's what I'm learning from them. It's the impact they're having upon me. And James tells you, this is what the crucible can look like. This is what it can feel like. Out of it comes patience, endurance. Out of it comes maturity of character. And I just want to say simply tonight, you don't learn those things from a textbook. You don't find them, sorry, in a Ritchie commentary. You find them, don't you, in the experience of life. You find it in the crucible of life. need I share with you tonight? That something worthwhile came out of Elijah's experience in that crucible of Zarephath. A raw, if we may put it like this, a raw young man went into the crucible, a mature man of God came out at the end of it. My, he displayed endurance, didn't he? He displayed patience. He never sought to escape out of the crucible, even when the brook dried up. Or even when he was told to go to Zarephath, where a widow, mark you, was to sustain him, not him sustain her. He didn't seek to get out of the crucible. Or when he arrived and found that the crucible meant there was a widow woman in such an unpromising set of circumstances, gathering sticks, just preparing to make a final meal before she and her son died. He never sought to escape out of that. He learnt so much out of that. A widow woman will say to him, a handful of meal, a little oil in a cruse, a little cake that ultimately leads to death. And we might have said, we're off. We might have said, there's somewhere better than this. There's somewhere safer than this. I'm getting out of this crucible. How many times have you felt like that? If only there was a way of escape. If only you could have got out of it. But Elijah won't be deflected. His response was, easily said, but he meant it. Fear not. Can we just share kindly with folks tonight? If you're in the midst of a crucible, it's really hard to understand and really hard to come to grips with.